This is Food Secure Nation with Dr. Phil Knight and Jerry Brisson. Sponsored by Know Better, Do Better, KBDB. Engaging change makers, charting solutions, and driving progress for food security in America. Dr. Phil Knight.
Welcome, everyone, and thanks for listening. Stephen Covey once wrote that trust is the highest form of human motivation. When people trust each other, things move faster. When systems trust each other, outcomes multiply. The idea matters in the fight against hunger, because food security isn't just about food being present. It's about something bigger. At Food Secure Nation, we talk about the six dimensions of food security: availability, access, utilization, stability, sustainability, and agency. Six conditions that have to work together if families are truly going to thrive. Food can't be available, but not accessible. It can't be accessible, but not nutritious. A program can work today, but collapse tomorrow if it isn't stable and sustainable. And perhaps most importantly, the people experiencing hunger must have agency, a voice in shaping the systems meant to serve them. None of these dimensions live inside one organization. They live in relationships between organizations, which is why the leaders like Mandy Pallaro and Jory Novotny play such an important role. Mandy is from Feeding Colorado, and Jory leads the Ohio Association of Food Banks. From their vantage points at the state level, they see the whole system, where it works, where it strains, and where collaboration lifts. So in this hour, we're going to explore those six dimensions and what they look like in the real world. Because food security isn't just about moving food, it's about building systems that work for the long haul. And when those systems align around the people they serve, that's when the magic starts to happen for families, farmers, and food banks. Welcome, everyone. As promised, Jory Novotny of the Ohio Association of Food Banks and Mandy Pallaro from Feeding Colorado, who were our recent guest, and you guys came back.
Yes, it's the water in both states. It must be.
It must be. Well, thanks for rejoining us. Thanks for being back. Two shows in a row with you guys is pretty special. And just want to say thanks for being here. And the first show you guys did with us was awesome. It talked about the work of partner state associations and the impact, as well as the opportunities that partner state associations can bring to this nationwide work of creating a food secure nation. So welcome back, ladies.
Thank you.
Hey, that was pretty good harmony there.
It was.
So, all right. So we're going to jump into today's show, today's topic, the six dimensions of food security. We talk about it a lot here on Food Secure Nation. So, Jerry, to kick us off, why don't you give us a quick recap of the six dimensions of food security?
So it's all the things that you have to think about if you're going to run programs to have more food security. So it's availability, which is there food at all? Which, by the way, this is a United Nations program, so there's a lot of countries where even availability is not a guarantee. Here in the United States, we pretty much have food availability. You could argue a little bit for homebound people, or you could argue a little bit for food deserts, but bottom line is availability is usually not the biggest issue, but access becomes the issue. That's the second dimension. That says, if food is available, does everyone that need it have access to it? The third part is utilization. Is it food that they want and need? Right? Is it the food that's going to make them healthiest? Is it the food that meets their cultural norms? Is it the food that they need for religious purposes? Will they use the food if they have access to it and it's available? Stability says, will it be there when they need it? right? Is this a come and go thing, or is it there for the long haul? What does it take to have programs that are stable? Sustainability says we also have to think about the impact on the environment and the other consequences this program might have that might not be positive, right? What are the unintended consequences of the program? Is this a sustainable program overall in terms of how it's designed and the benefits and drawbacks to it? And then agency really is about how much is this what people actually would choose if they had a choice? You know, and so you say when people can really, so client choice was an idea 20 years ago that said people can come and pick from what we have. Agency would say everything there is something they would want. So there's a difference between agency and availability or access, right? Agency says, this really is what I would want, and it empowers people, and it's much more dignified to think about it that way. So that's kind of setting the stage for thinking about all of those things will make programs stronger, and not necessarily having to reinvent the wheel in every case. Can we find a way to think more broadly about these dimensions so that we can make our program stronger? And is that another way that we get to the next threshold of food security? And based on the last show and what you have already talked about, state associations and your state associations and the things that you've done to bring greater perspective and greater voice, greater agency, it sounds like this is just a natural fit for you both. And so with that, I'm going to turn it over to both of you. And boy, I think we gave Mandy the last first shot, so we'll give Jory the first shot this time. What do you think, Jory?
Well, thank you for giving me that honor or that task to chew off first. I completely agree that all six of these dimensions are things that come up regularly in how we think about and approach our work. And they're also sometimes incongruous with one another and difficult to reconcile with one another. For example, I think one of the biggest tensions we have is trying to both support and prioritize agency when we are dealing within an environment where we might lack the availability that we need within our charitable hunger relief systems, where we might be reckoning with the desire to promote agency and full choice and access to preferred foods within limited resources and shrinking resources and a network that relies on, a whole host of food sourcing models that don't always give us the agency to choose what foods we would like to have on the shelves in the first place. But there's so much involved in the six dimensions of food security. And what I think is interesting as well is that, I often think of food security as a tool to promote economic security, right? So if beyond all of these six dimensions of food security, there's also the reality that if you're facing food budget shortfalls, you're also facing other economic pressure. So how can we address, as folks focused on food security, these six dimensions so that the neighbors that we're helping today can think about other priorities for themselves and their families tomorrow?
Yeah, and hopefully we can develop a framework here where you actually have some numbers that proves that agency does produce value beyond access or availability. So that Absolutely. When you're having the debate, you can say, yeah, but if we prioritize agency, instead of thinking of it as, so therefore we couldn't provide this particular food, you think of it as, it actually generates more for that household because of the choices they're able to make by focusing on agency that doesn't have to come from the charitable network, right? The people we serve are part of the solution. They're not a problem to be solved. And when you start thinking about it that way, agency doesn't become a trade-off. It becomes a necessity.
That's well said. Absolutely well said. We have to switch our paradigms in a lot of ways to really take in all six dimensions and approach them collectively.
But it helps to have the numbers that back it up, right? I mean, it's a theory. How do we prove it out? And you got to do the work on the ground and run the numbers and understand them better. And then you can get to a place where you can say, in fact, if you spend this $10 on agency, you get $100 on the other side. You know, and right. So, you know, it's a discipline. But anyway, I've talked enough. We need to hear from Mandy.
Well, yeah, so well said, Jory. And I love the framing of food security as economic security. I think we talk about it all the time here in Colorado, you know, at a policy lens, both state and federal. That food's what drives people into the network of social services, but it is rarely their only challenge, rather, you know, a symptom of others. And I think one of the challenges is that our network was really generally built to respond to temporary or emergent situations, and that's just no longer the case or the reality for the majority of the families and neighbors that we serve. You know, we're a part of their ongoing strategy for household stability and security, and when the problem grows at a faster pace than the resources, you really have to think about this differently and kind of reframing those pieces. And I think, you know, our work, we really think about it in sort of three buckets from a policy lens, both like I said earlier, federal and state. But what are we doing to meet needs now? What does that look like? And that's really how we organize our policy and advocacy work. What are we doing to reduce food insecurity? And then what are we doing to end it? And I'm going to clarify ending, because I know that is a commonly debated thing in this network. And I would define myself, and Phil knows this, as a pragmatic idealist. So I think the reality is we're not going to end it. There's always going to be situations where families need it. But what would it look like for our network, the Charitable Food Network, to be truly emergent, right? To just be responding to emergent needs rather than that ongoing strategy. So to me, that's how I define ending food insecurity, is we are going to be like that stopgap to help people and be what we were sort of divined for, rather than sort of, I'm going to say the controversial thing, subsidizing the non-existent middle class.
Is that really part of pragilism? I mean, yeah.
I like that combo, Jerry.
That's really good. I knew it was going to leak out there somewhere, but there it was. I love it. We're going to pick it up on the other side of this break. That's Mandy Pilaro. That's Jory Novotny. That's Jerry Brisson. And I'm Dr. Phil Knight. We're all four back with you in just a moment.
You're listening to Food Secure Nation with Dr. Phil Knight and Jerry Brisson. Sponsored by Know Better, Do Better.
Welcome back, everyone. Thanks for being with us. Jerry Brisson, Dr. Phil Knight with Mandy Pilaro and Jory Novotny. Mandy of Feeding Colorado, Jory of Ohio Association of Food Banks. And it's exciting to have you two here to talk about the six dimensions of food security, which is a framework of how we think about this work could be more effective than what it's been in the past. And, you know, I'll just remind everybody that food banking in general is not very old. It's only about one generation old. Sometimes people think of it like the fire station. You know, you drive by it, and you don't really ever notice it until you need it. And I think food banks, people just assume that this community-based organization that is helping people have access to the food they want and need has been around for eons of time. The work has been around, but not necessarily in the form of a food bank. And Mandy, as you talked about in this first segment here together, was, you know, we were designed to do something entirely different than what we're having, the circumstances we're having to deal with today. And that was emergency food, and now it's seemingly more chronic than it's ever been, with the issue now that has surfaced in the last few years of affordability. So with that in mind, you know, we do want to help people get the food that they want and need. We want them to be a part of the solution. And as Jerry, as you said, they're not problems to be solved. They're partners to be engaged. And actually, I said that. That was pretty good. and then also, you know, to use the food for, you know, for an outcome that we like to refer to as health, so that the quality of their life is better, it's more enjoyable. And so let's talk about those two aspects of these six dimensions. And so, you know, really, I think part of where that starts is not talking.
You mean you not talking?
Anyone.
Oh, I thought you were talking about the show.
No.
All right, we're back to society. Okay,
we're back
I'm with you.
Yeah, so it starts with listening. So I would start there with you two. And that is, how at the State Association are you listening to your members, to the state, to the feds? You got to do a lot of listening, including to the community.
One of the just like kind of very practical ways that we listen is we do coordinate a lot of statewide grant opportunities that really allow our member food banks or their partner agencies to do listening sessions. So we've done a lot of those on the, like, some examples are the intersection of SNAP and Medicaid and barriers to applying. We really learned a lot of that, and we're able to share some of that information. I guess we learned a lot about the challenges and just different components and barriers, and we're able to share that not only with food bank staff that work in service of communities, so like community partner roles, or SNAP outreach staff, which are really application assisters, and also with our partners at the state. And so I think, and that is solely on just listening to neighbors' experience, utilizing those services, as well as, you know, being a part of our network where they may be visiting a food pantry in our network. And so we've gotten a lot out of that. And then one of the other pieces is that we always bring partner agencies or neighbors with us to DC. We just came back from a fly-in last week at the national level. And, you know, in years past, we've either brought an agricultural partner who both get donated food from their farm and also purchase food from them. And then we've also brought some of our smaller pantries in more rural parts of the state, or some of our larger pantries that distribute a variety of programs, including TFAP, the Emergency Food Assistance Program, and then also neighbors, and having them share their experience and what that looks like, and actually really help with undoing some of those myths about who we're serving. I tell people all the time, like, that image of who people often think. This is, we're talking about working families, dual income families, and depending on the communities you live in here in Colorado, that can be incredibly challenging what you actually need income wise to be self-sufficient. So I do love that, and it's the most meaningful part of this work, I would say, in our opportunity to really, like, uplift voices and actually, like, empower people to share power. And I always, like, my guiding statement is nothing about us without us is for us. And I think I love that, you know, framing. It's not a problem people are not a problem to be solved, that they are really part of this work and really can drive changing outcomes.
That's great. I love that. And shared value there, not a problem to be solved, a people to be engaged in with. So, Jory, how about you?
Yeah, I mean, I could just say plus one to everything Mandy had to say. You said that so so beautifully.
Did she send you a check? I mean, really?
She lends me her in-kind emotional support.
Ah,
so, you know, that's what we
go.
Have to have
there
friends and is friends in this work. No, I mean, I think we're similar in a lot of ways. I have to give all the credit to my team. I get the pleasure of having a lot of folks who, you know, choose to do this work every day on our team because they really want to listen and then try to deliver impact for neighbors, for provider networks. And so we try to take a, you know, multi-pronged approach whenever we're approaching an opportunity to share our story, which I look at as a collective story, both of what neighbors are experiencing, why they're seeking out help from our network, what they rely on from our network, what they wish were different, what is putting pressure on their household budgets and on their economic stability, their health, as you said, Phil, and also what our providers need, our pantries, our food banks. What is it that is missing? What challenges are they facing? What opportunities are they seeing? Often we get our best ideas because a food bank already had it and they want to share it. You know, they want to share an idea that we can build on, build momentum on. So it goes back to learning from one another and making spaces for, you know, our members to learn from one another and to tell us where they need guidance, where they need support, where they need collective will, because a problem or a challenge or an opportunity is, you know, either too daunting for them to climb on their own, or because it has so much potential for outsized benefit that they want to, you know, see it scaled and sustained. And, you know, I think practically we take that, we do that intentionally with any data collection that we're doing. You know, we're just now preparing for our 2026 hunger study. We'll be collecting about 3,000 surveys from food pantry visitors, asking them what their experiences are, you know, why they're coming to us, what we can learn from them and help, what impact we can help drive with them, as well as collecting stories and then staying engaged, right? We don't want to we're trying to move from a transactional relationship with neighbors and setting them up for sort of like a one-time opportunity to elevate their story, and instead being engaged longer term with them and understanding the hills and valleys that they're experiencing as they navigate food insecurity.
So I want to give a little teaser as we finish up this segment, and we'll get into it in the next segment. Here's the teaser. The teaser is, how do we know what we believe? And we know what we believe by how we behave. That's the answer to the question. And so you have an image in your mind of a food donor, an image in your mind of a cash donor, and an image in your mind of someone seeking help. How are each of those people treated? Are each of them treated as if they're part of the solution? Or does our behavior belie what we really think about each of those people? That's the teaser question. What do we believe by how we behave? And we will be right back for the next segment.
Welcome back, everyone. Our guests, Mandy Pilaro of Feeding Colorado and Jory Novotny of the Ohio Association of Food Banks, and me, Dr. Phil Knight, and the inquisitor extraordinaire... Jerry, you had a very interesting question that you closed the last segment with. Would you bear to repeat that for us?
Even shorter
would be great.
So the gist of the question is, how do we know what we believe? And the answer is by how we behave. How we behave tells us what we believe, whether we like it or not. And so as we think about and we say that the people who need assistance are, I would say, one of the biggest parts of the solution, maybe the biggest part of the solution, is going to be the people who need help. They can do so much in their own life with their own agency, right? So if we believe that, how do we know what we believe? And I put up a donor of food or a donor of cash and a person that needs help, and I ask, how do we behave with each one of these three? Do we treat them all as if they're part of the solution, or are we more likely to treat one or the other as part of the solution? And what does that actually look like? And I'm not trying to put anyone on the spot, but more to say, when we align our work with the idea that people who need assistance are a really important part of the solution, they have something we don't have and won't have without them, does that change any of the work? Or is it like, no, that's exactly how we behave? So I'm just interested in your reaction to that kind of thinking.
Mm-hmm. I mean, my reaction is that it's there but for the grace of God, go I. And I'm going to borrow a story from Kurt Reiber, who's a long tenured CEO of one of my food banks, a Free Store food bank out of Cincinnati, who's told this story a few times. And I think it puts the nail on the head. You know, he had a volunteer at a food pantry in his network who came to seek out some help with food from that food pantry with his, you know, young child. And, you know, the child asked, are we here to make a donation to the food bank? Because he was familiar with the food bank and their work. And, you know, they had supported the food bank as food donors, as volunteers. And the dad said to the son, you know, well, we've been making deposits at the food bank, and today we're here to make a withdrawal. And every time I hear Kurt talk about that story, see, I get choked up. But that's really, my answer to your question, honestly, Jerry, is that most people are going to find themselves in both of those positions or all three of those positions at some point in their lives. So, we're no different if we're on one side of the line or the other. Often, the people volunteering and bringing in the spare foods and products that they got because they had a coupon for something they don't really enjoy to eat, and who bring it with them when they come for their volunteer shift and then take home a bag of food because they're short, 30% of people in Ohio are income eligible for our services. 30% of people. This is not, 3.3 million people or so here in Ohio, yeah, under 200% of the federal poverty level. So you're right. It's very, very important that we take every person's role in the network seriously, and that we make all of their voices heard. And often those voices are one and the same.
Love that. Mandy?
I'm not sure how to follow that. I love that. Thank you for sharing that story. And I do agree. And I would also ask, how are we defining we in this? I think there's been the we historically that they likely were those different kind of groupings treated differently, or it's like, oh, if we just have enough money, if we just keep, whether it's, government funds or private donors, that we can really solve this. And I think we see that to not be true. And certainly here in Colorado, there's in many, many states, such a shift between the support we all received during COVID, both from a government level, private level, and what was really able to happen. But I think the piece that is just so important is that when you lead with the neighbor voice, you're going to hear a lens that you don't often, and you hear people's stories and the impacts, and it is always around these root causes of food insecurity, the different people that, like I said, drive them into needing services at a food bank or a food pantry. And I think that's what drives our policy efforts. Everything comes from sort of that bottom-up approach versus the top-down. And I think that's how we organize our efforts here in Colorado. And I think earlier we kind of mentioned the piece about health. And I think for us and our networks, that really is an important part of how we are moving forward and changing this work based on what we're hearing from our neighbors. And we really seek to support policies and programs that improve the health and economic stability of Coloradans through a variety of programs. And that's all driven from neighbor voice, from perspectives on what changes health outcomes, and certainly health being a significant driver of food insecurity. And so I think just taking that approach where you do shift and recognize that a lot of the structures we have historically in place are from treating each of those components of the network, whether it's, a donor, somebody who needs our services, differently. And when we recognize their role in the system as it exists now and how it can change it into the future, I think we're all going to be better off.
Listening to the question, which I grew to appreciate...
yeah, that's a hard question, Jerry. All right.
And the reason I grew to appreciate it because of the answers that Jory and Mandy
gave.
There you go. That's why.
I knew that.
I didn't have to explain it.
I had faith.
Yeah. So here's what I'm worried. This is me. If I were going to answer that question, I would be worried about how did I treat the third person? That would be, do I have a deficit when I interacted with the person who actually needed the service? Did I treat the cash donor or the food donor differently than I treated the person who actually needs the service? So it reminds me of Maya Angelou, who I'm not sure why she's not recorded in the Bible or some scripture somewhere, because she's profound, because she's the one who said, people will forget what you said, people will forget what you did, but people will never forget how you made them feel. And we had Virginia Witherspoon on the show a few weeks ago, who's the chair of the National Advisory Committee and also the director at Channel One Food Bank in Rochester, Minnesota. And she said, dignity is free. It doesn't cost, it costs nothing to welcome someone well, to trust them and to treat them like a shopper instead of a client. So for me, I'm gonna have to take inventory. It was a great question. I hate telling you that, but it was a great question.
Especially after you told them not to say that to me.
Right, right. So 100%. So yeah, that's good. You got a follow-up to that?
Well, really, I think my only follow-up is unrelated, but I'm curious for the answer. You're walking along the beach, you pick up a lamp, you rub it, a genie pops out and says, you can have one policy change. That's it, one. What is the policy change you ask for? Jory, we'll go you first.
Oh, I think the genie has given me one wish. This is a dream.
That's right. One policy change. One. This is it.
I want everyone to have a safe, reliable roof over their head. So, you know, I'm not a housing policy expert, but, you know, I think when we talk about the six dimensions of food security, and you mentioned availability not being the biggest crisis of crises in relation to food security, because, you know, Americans relatively compared to the global economy have an access to abundant, affordable food. But what's making it difficult for them to afford that food is the pressure of what it costs them to have a safe place to live. And I think that if everyone had that promise, that we could do a whole lot as a society, and it would give every person a chance to not worry about transiency, not worry about making next month's rent. They can, so policies that would really provide reliable, affordable access to safe shelter first. And on the Maslow's hierarchy of need, I think we can solve every other problem on our own together.
Great. Great. Love it. Mandy?
Oh, my gosh. can I have, like, the longest run-on sentence ever?
I've asked my kid this question before. It's a good one to talk with your kids about as you're trying to create new pragmatic idealists like Mandy.
Yes, exactly. I think for me, the challenge of being stuck is that there's, like, for me, no one big move that's going to completely alter food insecurity, because they're just so intertwined. But I, being the practical kind of person here, I think for me, the role of government is going to be to support those in need, our most vulnerable populations. And I think when you see a policy or a program that changes outcome and reduces poverty, that's a good answer that it works. We have that data that changing SNAP allotment levels during COVID significantly reduced childhood poverty. And when we're talking about changing futures and outcomes and generational poverty, I think you have a federal program that's going to support our most vulnerable populations. And so that's what I would say. I know it sounds so simple, but you're always going to have people that need supplemental assistance. And so SNAP allotments actually keeping up with the cost of groceries and the environment and inflation. And on the flip side, it is also an economic generator for communities. You support those retailers, like I talked about in the first show, that are small, independent, rural retailers, and 70% of their sales are SNAP. And we have farmers in Colorado where they've been able to diversify their markets based on providing SNAP at their or accepting SNAP, I should say, being a SNAP retailer at their farm stand. So I think it's a simple one to some extent, but when you see that there was data to show that it changed poverty outcomes, it reduced it by nearly half in Colorado, it works. So that's what I would say.
Great.
I'm giving plus ones to both those policies. And I used to say I wanted to change the federal poverty measure. I would just like to create the policy where the federal poverty measure is no longer needed.
There you go. Yeah. There you go.
So, hey, Mandy, Jory, Mandy Pilaro, Jory Novotny, Mandy from Feeding Colorado, and Jory from the Ohio Association of Food Banks, it is great to have you guys with us. Thank you for carving out so much time, and thanks for your perspective. I think we're all wiser for it.
Thank you both. Thank you both.
Jerry and I are back to wrap up this edition in just a moment.
Food Secure Nation is sponsored by Know Better, Do Better. Engaging change makers, charting solutions, and driving progress for food security in America. Once again, here are Dr. Phil Knight and Jerry Brisson.
Jerry, having Mandy Pilaro from Feeding Colorado, Jory Novotny from the Ohio Association of Food Banks talk about the six dimensions that they're already implementing. They understand the work from that perspective.
Yeah, without a doubt. And it was fun to tease them up, you know, get some questions out there, hear what they had to say. And they were both inspiring and super thoughtful. And it gives me hope for the work.
I'm excited about their generation of leadership that's coming in. And it's you're right. I agree. It is exciting.
Yeah.
So time for a little food for thought. Food security is not one program. It is six interlocking commitments: availability, access, utilization, stability, sustainability, and agency all have to work together. Building a food secure nation requires coordination, collaboration, and leadership across communities, states, and the country. And when that occurs at scale, that's when we will have built a food secure nation.